Well, I got some bad news today, Catherine.
What?
I got back from the doctor and she told me I'd been dead for 3 weeks.
Oh my God. So that was the problem with our communication.
I've been a little sluggish, I guess. And she asked me, what are you doing? Why are you still walking around? You should be dead.
Oh my gosh.
I said, I'm sorry, doctor, but I'm a podcaster. I've got important work to do.
The show must go on.
The show is way too important for me to be dead.
Right.
There's no time for that.
No time. Well, that's weird news.
Nah, just a stupid joke. Maybe you've been doing something more important than I have?
I've been doing something more important than you. Well, I don't know if it's more important. I do just want to say I've been doing this 100-day project with Suleika Jawad. Well, not with her. I mean, it's all online. And it's just like 100 days of creativity. It started on April 1st. And, of course, I've not been posting any of my creativity. But
is that
I was
part
planning
of the challenge?
On... Well, a lot of people post and then you find it on Instagram. There are these, you know, any, it's just the gamut of poetry or little films or people painting or doing watercolors. And I just keep doing stuff or adding to stuff. And just the whole thing is just, you know, just to create something beautiful, one little beautiful thing a day. And at first it sounded a little bit, I know we had talked about it and it sounded maybe a little contrived, but actually, focusing on the process has made me become very aware of things. It's like changing my perspective.
Well, focusing on the process is part of being a professional.
Right.
Doing it every day and putting the hours in, whether you want to or not, whether you feel inspired or not.
Right.
If you only do the work when you feel inspired, you're not a professional artist.
Uh-huh.
You're just, you're...
No, if you just sit there waiting for
right,
a muse.
You're a hack. Because
you know.
That doesn't happen. You got to do the work.
Right.
So that's a good doorway into creativity.
It is. And so, you know, shout out. And it can be found on Instagram. And when I post my stuff, I had thought about starting a separate Instagram account, but I think I will just, I don't have enough on my own feed, and I actually have people who look at it.
Well, you know, if you start creating a bunch of different accounts, what's the purpose? I do right. I do have a separate account for my paintings and for my personal stuff, because I don't want those two things to be overlapping. Like, I don't want to have a painting and then a cat, and then a painting and then a bicycle. It doesn't really seem to suit me that well, so that's... I have two Instagram accounts, and those are the two, you know, one's for painting and one's for my dumb stuff.
So far, it's just been all dumb stuff. I only have like maybe five
or creative,
six
though.
Posts.
I don't know if you call that dumb.
You know, I might just continue. So anyway, that was just my little shout out to the creativity of the world. For 100 days, we're just consciously creating.
The creative part of our podcast is now over.
Is it?
Because what are you forcing me to talk about today, Catherine?
Oh, Jeff Koons on the moon. I thought that was amazing.
I know I sent this to you, so this is kind of my fault, but I begged
fault.
You not to talk. I told you I didn't have the energy. I begged you that let's not talk about it, and you refused. You just shoved it down my throat.
I refused. I think we should talk about it because...
You're so mean to me sometimes. You know that?
Sometimes. Not really, James. Not really. I just thought this was interesting. It's like...
Interesting.
You know, when I first...
It's discouraging.
Well, right, because it's so egoic and so ridiculous.
It's so what?
But it's like when egoic...
What does that mean?
Ego. It's just... Isn't it a word?
I've never heard it.
Egoic?
I guess we'll have to double check on that. We'll do some fact checking.
Yes, we'll have to do some fact checking on me. But I was just kind of thinking like space, the final frontier for the rich and egoic. I mean, that's kind of what... because all these like rich guys are going to space. It's like this bizarre new industry around money,
well,
right?
Yeah. It is kind of stupid that they're pretending to go into space. They're now astronauts. No, you're not astronauts.
Right. You're not an astronaut. You're not. So anyway.
I will say the article I read was kind of boring and dull, but the one you sent from Sarah Rose Sharp, writing for
Hyperallergic.com.
Okay. Loved her writing.
Wasn't that phenomenal? I thought that would motivate you to talk about this thing.
I don't know.
Because yours was a little dry.
It was a little mean. It seemed like she was taking poor old Koons out to the woodshed.
Yeah.
Which he kind of deserves.
Yes, she was.
She had some good lines. I just want to dive into the line. So I guess to explain exactly what's happening, yes, in fact, Jeff Koons has a plan to send his artwork, well, his alleged artwork, to the moon. And this started because some... Japanese billionaire made a joke about how he wants to send a pop artist into space basically to get rid of them. And then Koons read that and it's like, yeah, that's a good idea. I'll send my work to the moon. So what started as a joke, Koons turned into a career, which basically is the history of Koons' career. He takes something that's a joke and makes it into a career, because the art world is so bereft of meaning and anything of actual real value that they just, you know, they'll take it. I thought that was ridiculous. So the beautiful quotes, a couple really nice quotes from the article from Sarah, and this is the first one. One must tip the hat to Koons for incorporating upper class space tourism into NFTs, thus making them the most obnoxious and wasteful example of an already deeply obnoxious and wasteful art movement, that being NFTs.
I thought that was beautiful.
I forgot to mention off the top that not only is he sending artwork to the moon, he's also making an NFT of it. Because, as Sarah points out, it's not obnoxious enough just to be one or the other. You got to do both.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you really want to waste as much energy as possible and destroy the Earth as quickly as possible, NFTs and moon travel, wasteful, unnecessary moon travel, are two ways to really do it. I mean, it's hard to figure out better ways to really use a lot of energy that has no useful impact on humanity.
Right. But according to Koons, he said, I wanted to create a historically meaningful NFT project. Our achievements in space represent the limitless potential of humanity.
Yeah, but it doesn't, because he's got no potential. He's barely human. He and Mark Zuckerberg seem like they're on the kind of the same way. They both seem like lizard people to me. They don't seem real. Those people don't seem like they can really be real. It seems like some artist is creating these characters and making us believe they're real. That's the real art here. That we believe these
that
people
might
are
be.
Actually
you
real.
May have just nailed it. You may have
I
just
finally cracked
it.
The shell.
You cracked the shell.
Or the egg, the lizard egg.
Mm-hmm. Moon Phases is the name of the project, and they're physical sculptures that'll be left permanently on the moon. And allegedly these little, like a little box. The article I sent you, she said that it was like a little box of like 6x6 right. on all sides.
Yeah, I didn't even understand what they were doing there. It's just like, you're sending a cube. What's the deal with a cube? I don't understand.
Well, I looked online for images of what they were sending, and I could not find any images of what they were sending.
I think we'd be better off just sending a Rubik's Cube up there.
I'm surprised one isn't up there.
No, I don't think it's going to be permanent, because I think I'm going to start a Kickstarter campaign to create a spaceship and go up and take crap off the moon and throw it into the sun.
I know. It's like space junk. I mean, haven't they effed up this planet enough? Now they got to go to our little moon?
Or, you know what we should do?
What?
We should hire the guy who is really good at destroying artwork. You know, that guy who went into the Miami art show and took the banana off the wall and ate it? I think he'd be the right guy to take care of this for us.
Oh, God.
You send him up there to sweep up all the trash that Koons is sending up to the moon and eat it.
Got to give it to Koons. I'm clapping.
No, don't give. Oh, what are you doing?
For a fine example of an obnoxious art movement.
Douchebaggery. We should have a douchebag award.
Douchebag of the week.
Yeah, douchebag
of
the week.
Yeah. Okay, douchebag of the week.
Okay, so Sarah I don't think she finished off the article, but she added this into it, which I thought was some nice sarcasm. Quote, if the moon follows Earth's trends, we can look forward to the first female artist being exhibited there sometime in the early 3000s.
I thought that was fantastic.
She's so sarcastic. I love her. She's
I loved
brilliant.
Her. I love that. I thought you would get motivated by that article to talk about Jeff Koons.
Well, she has just the right dismissive tune to deal with these douchebags. Mm-hmm. We should give her an award.
The writer of the week.
Writer of the month. Most of the other writers.
Possibly the decade.
Most of the other writers we...
Most of the other writers we discuss are...
Awful.
Awful. Okay.
Dreadful. Okay.
Including me.
No, your work, you have shared with me so far, I thought was really good.
Oh, well, thank you.
Can we incorporate one of those at the end of the show?
Today?
Yeah, one of the letters?
Let's hold up. I've got to find them. We'll maybe we'll end it. Yeah.
End the podcast.
As we're approaching. End the podcast. When we end Finally. The podcast. Well, what's next on our agenda?
I mean, I can only be a zombie for so long. I'm eventually going to fall apart.
I know. Oh, don't do that.
I'll get some duct tape. What was that? What was that movie with Goldie Hawn? Was it Goldie Hawn and Meryl Streep, where there were zombies?
Oh, yes.
That was not a good movie. I really wanted to like that movie, but it really wasn't that good. Death Becomes Her.
No,
was it Death,
Death
Becomes,
Becomes
Her?
Her. Yeah, yes, I found it disturbing.
I found it, you know, underwhelming. They needed more. They needed a sharper comic. They needed a comic who was willing, or you know, comedic writer who was willing to push the bounds. I thought they were a little bit too safe with it.
I just found it horrifying.
What are we talking about?
I don't know.
There's another vulgar topic to talk about that, and that would be one mother's mission to ban vulgar books from high school libraries.
Oh, you sent me this. I really got triggered by this. Thank you for triggering me for a change.
Well, I tried to create a dialogue, to start a dialogue with you, because mm-hmm. I think it was worth talking about. I think it was a genuine question about what books should be in high school. Are there some books that shouldn't be in high school libraries? I don't think I want all the books out there to be in the libraries. I think we should be careful about which ones we do put in there, but maybe I'm wrong.
My question, and I didn't dive any deeper, is what was the bar for stocking libraries in various levels of school?
Well, right
you
now...
You know, what is the bar? Obviously, there's no pornography and certain things are off limits.
Well, here's the thing. This woman would argue that the books that she wants to ban are, in fact, pornographic. It may not be right. visually pornographic, but that doesn't mean does you know just you can have words in a book that are pornographic. It doesn't have to just be pictures or video or stuff like that. I would always leave it up to the librarian. I think the librarian should be in charge of what books are in the library, and you have to hire right. good librarians, and you know you can't run amok. I can't think of any books that I would want to ban, but just as a type of media like. A Clockwork Orange, the movie. Oh, that was actually a book, too. I haven't read the book, though, so I can't, say anything about the book. But like, I wouldn't want A Clockwork Orange, the movie, to be in a high school library because I think you need to be a bit more adult than most high school kids would be to be able to watch and understand that movie.
Right. It's the same way that you vet things that you would have Bob watch. Like you were in several podcasts ago, you talked about, oh, there's something I didn't want him to see. There are certain things.
Right.
You know, it's like you kind of, I mean, as a parent and as an educator, and I think people have common sense.
Have common sense. That's the dumbest thing you've ever said, Catherine. I can't believe you just said that. Have you not met people? You're not familiar with people?
Well, I don't like people anymore. Okay. I was out and about yesterday and I decided that I'd rather just stay at my house. I wanted to give it to the educators. That's what I'm saying. Like maybe not people in general, because I think like they've lost their shit, particularly in this country, around certain issues that used to be just everything's gotten political now.
Everything's gotten political now, but not for political reasons. It's more like a tribal reasons.
It's becoming very tribal, correct. And so when I see this title, One Mother's Mission to Ban Vulgar Books, it's like, okay, so one mother, it's like you've got school boards, you've got educators, you've got, you know, people who are trained to be teachers, you've got librarians who also went to school. You know, there has to be some sort of common ground in terms of what was acceptable. And I mean, you and I grew up okay. I don't remember ever checking out weird stuff.
I don't know about that.
Oh, I think we're fine, you know. And so now because someone has, I'm looking at us on Zoom.
These do not look like normal people to me.
Maybe we're the aliens. It really rubbed me the wrong way that one woman's aesthetic preferences, you know, and she's identifying what she feels could make students feel discomfort, guilt, anguish, or other types of emotional distress. So she's speaking to a cadre of families.
Well, the school board mostly, but and I would take issue with the idea that you have to whitewash all of this stuff to make so that that students never feel uncomfortable. I mean, you're supposed to challenge them. They're learning stuff. But I will say this in her defense. She's uh-huh. doing exactly what I want people to do. She's taking an interest in her kids and the school, her local schools, and what's actually going on there. So I have to give her credit for engaging. And she's bringing her perspective into the conversation. Again, I would always want to leave it up to the professional, leave it up to the librarian, not even the school board. I'd really rather have the librarian, you know, assuming we have decent librarians, allow the librarian to make the decision as to what should be in the library and whatnot.
Absolutely. But on her list.
Now, she can have a conversation with the librarian and decide, you know, they can come to an understanding about why this book is worth having or maybe not worth having.
But she's out hunting for books. I mean, I felt like she was like a vigilante, you know, and on the list were... many books about Black Lives Matter, LGBTQ issues. There was even one book banning the discussion of it was about a quinceañera.
Well, see, I don't know the books. I haven't read the books that she's talking about, so I can't really make a comment on whether these are silly books to ban or if these are legitimate books to ban. It's hard to
Right. Well, I wanted to go through and look at that. But the kids I thought were interesting in the little film. They were talking about how they felt that the quote was, they want to keep us in a white supremacist heterosexual box.
I think that's a really silly thing to say.
Do you?
I do. I don't think anyone's really trying to do... Well, okay. Maybe in Florida and Texas.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But for the most part, you know, the librarians and the school councils aren't trying to do that. I mean, it's just this hyperbolic talk.
But hyperbolic talk against hyperbolic action. I really had issue with this woman's quest to hunt books. And one of her quotes, she said, "My focus is not to pull books that have certain ideologies. That is not the first focus when I look for books, but it is a focus." And she's and her books really followed a pattern. And so I think that what's happening in this country is very scary to me in terms of the boundaries now of censorship. And it starts off, you know, little, and then it's just like a big old rock falling down a mountain, you know, like that becomes an avalanche. And I feel like we're moving so far back. It's like, yes, I don't want kids to be exposed to pornography or things that are suggestive or whatever. But, you know, there are families who are blended. There are people who aren't Caucasian. There are people who celebrate quinceañera. There are gay families. I mean, why should we? That is whitewashing it, James.
Well, that's not, what, it is what, whitewashing. I don't think it's whitewashing. It might be gay washing or, you know, trying to wash it. I don't think
gay washing, yeah. Right.
You know, don't bring the patriarchy into it. I mean, that's kind of silly. But, you know, I understand the ideas of censorship and you being careful not to have the slippery slope of, you know, we start losing. Well, I'm saying, the slippery slope of once you start allowing some discrimination along these lines, you know, where does it end? And you have to be, I grant that it's important, but I think, you know, like I said, I think it's important for people to be involved with their local communities. And this is one mother's opinion.
Right, it's one mother's opinion. So why don't the school boards look at this? I mean, if this is such a hot topic, maybe they need, you know, book clubs where people actually read the books, not just go henpicking through looking for suggestive.
Oh, Catherine, as a non-parent, you don't get how little engagement parents have with their kids. And if you expect parents to read the books, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
Well, I do expect parents to read the books if they're going to start censoring them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, she does. She has been reading the books, but I'm saying you can't expect to set up a whole council of parents who are going to go through and read the books because that's just not modern parenting in America.
Well, maybe it should be.
That's why we hire librarians.
Yeah, but if everyone's going to get their panties in a wad about books and, like, go hunting for...
Look, Catherine, my panties were already in a wad because of Netflix.
Well, mine aren't.
Maybe we should ban Netflix. Well, you are banning Netflix, aren't you?
I'm probably walking away from Netflix at the end of this month.
I am so far ahead of everybody else. I dropped Netflix like a year ago, was it 2 years ago now? I don't remember. It's a while ago now because they raised their prices and they lost a bunch of their content.
Right, and it's not necessarily because the content, because what I view is mostly, obviously, the K-dramas, and I think they do an okay job like with the translation. It's the connectivity issues that I'm having. It's like, I'm just sick and tired of it.
And what you mean by that is like you try to start a show and it just spins. You're getting a dead. It's not actually.
Or right in the middle of the show and it'll time out.
Boy, that's even worse.
Oh, gosh.
Now, that may be Netflix, but it also may be your internet service provider because it is well documented that internet service providers like CenturyLink and Cox and all the other ones will play games with Netflix's traffic or any really big streaming platform's traffic. To try to get more concessions out of them because it costs them money, right? It costs CenturyLink a lot of money to take that bandwidth from Netflix once it gets onto their network, onto the CenturyLink network, and actually deliver it to your house, Catherine. So, I'm not saying it isn't Netflix, but sometimes it's not Netflix. Sometimes it is your local provider that's intentionally messing up your stream. That said, I notice I don't use Netflix very much because I'm borrowing someone's account, so I hardly ever use it now. Yeah, I am. Wow.
Okay, so you're one of them.
But I was really surprised. I hadn't used it in about a year, and I used it again just to watch Witcher Season 2.
Ooh.
How bad the app has become. It doesn't remember where I've left off on the shows.
It doesn't?
No, it's like it keeps trying to play the last show I watched. Anyway, that's a small detail. But Netflix,
that's not happening with
Netflix is in the news so much now because you know, for the first time in 10 years, they reported a loss of subscribers of 200,000 people. And what's worse is they project they're going to lose a couple more million in the next few months.
Can you believe that? A couple more million?
Well, I can because I saw the writing on the wall and I left. 2 years ago.
Why exactly did you leave? Why?
I left because the prices went up and the content was going down. You know, they were losing a lot of content. They lost all of Star Trek, which, you know, Star Trek, you got to remember, Star Trek is the original series. It's the Next Generation, Voyager, Enterprise, and they never had Discovery, but that's another one as well. Did I even say Deep Space Nine? That's another one. So there's just like years worth of content of Star Trek that just one day went away.
Well, and let's talk about why they lost the content.
Paramount Plus, which is their own streaming service, wanted to bring it home and give themselves their own platform and force people to have yet another streaming service. Now, I don't know if Netflix, if they had negotiated more, if they could have kept Star Trek or not. I don't know if that was, if it was on the table to even do that, or if Paramount Plus had made a decision, or Paramount, I should say, made a decision to pull it and keep it on their own. I don't know. But I'm saying it's just, that was a big loss. That was just a constant struggle with Netflix. Is you be watching a show and then you get a notification, oh, by the way, this content is going no longer be available in 30 days. It's like, holy cow, the series I'm watching, like Psych or something, boom, it's going to be gone. So it was frustrating.
Right, because Netflix was streaming shows, but they didn't necessarily have the rights, like they weren't the creators, right?
Well, they didn't own it, so they had to pay for it, and they, you know, every year when the contract comes up for the renewal, do they keep it or they not keep it? And it's sometimes they don't know. Maybe it's not, they're not willing to pay the terms, or sometimes the owner doesn't want to share it anymore with Netflix.
Right. It kind of reminds me of what happened with Dish Network when satellite, you know, was kind of the king years and years ago, and then like slow but sure, like they started eroding things, and they'd fight with them in terms of like the how much we have Dish, and HBO disappeared for like 2 years before Game of Thrones, like the final season, and it's just like, oh, are you kidding me?
That's typical. They would take a big property like that and use that to leverage more money from the networks.
And so now HBO is back, and so I have HBO. We like stream HBO Max, and really I can get a good streaming situation with the Dish, etc., that we have here. And Netflix has just become this irritant,
expensive irritant.
It's only $15, $16 a month. Or something.
That's going up. It keeps going up though, you know. And that's every month.
Yeah, it might go up, and they're talking now about offering a cheaper option that has commercials.
Advertising. Nobody wants that.
No one wants that. But you know, I think the issue for me has been the connectivity. I called Dish so many times, and at one point when it was really bad, I should have dropped it like over a year ago. They'd be tweaking with my satellite from afar and doing all kinds of stuff. And they're like, yeah, there's this whole interface issue. And then they fixed it. I don't know what the hell was going on. They did pave the way for streaming. And so to take this a different way. And now that everyone's into the quote unquote streaming game, they invented streaming.
They really did. They laid the groundwork. They did all the work. And they did a brilliant job of migrating. I don't know if the kids remember this, but Netflix in its early days, you would get discs in the mail. It was when I signed up for Netflix, it was, hey, sign up for our service and we'll send you DVDs that you can keep for a couple of days, watch them, send them back, and we'll send you some more DVDs. So it was basically like Blockbuster, but in the mail. And it was better selection, and it was a lot cheaper. And it was fantastic. And I remember having that service, and you'd get the disc, you'd watch it, you'd send it back in like 2 or 3 days later. So this is super fast in those days to have that turnaround in the mail. They were perfect at that. They really were very good at that. And then they slowly transitioned to streaming. So as a subscriber to the DVD service, I got free streaming initially.
Oh, okay.
And there'd be a couple of shows here and there, and you start with it, and you know they were working out the teething problems of getting it to work properly. They got the platform worked out, and eventually, you know, they started charging for it. And then we dropped the DVD plan because, you know, who the hell needs DVDs if you can just stream it? So they did that brilliantly. It was really very smart, but I think they have completely failed to make the next shift, and that is they invented streaming. They dominated streaming. But then they created such a hot market that other people came into it with very specific brands.
Right.
Like Amazon, they'll go after specific niches within this media market. Disney has the action like sewed up. They have Star Wars and Marvel. Paramount has all the Star Trek stuff, and they've got Halo now, and they're trying to really go down that route. So Amazon had The Expanse, which was also really hard, well, not hard sci-fi, but very deep, specific sci-fi. So all these, and HBO and Apple TV are both going after the really high-end content, really well-crafted, really well-written stuff. And what does Netflix have?
Well, they have a lot of K-dramas.
Okay, but, you know, aside from you, Catherine, no one cares about that. That's not a big enough
market. People do care.
Netflix doesn't have anything like that. They don't. They're not the home of sci-fi. They're not the home of Game of Thrones. They're not the home of anything in specific. Yeah, right. Sure, they have Stranger Things, and they have some things they do. They don't do enough of their own content, though, and it's not specific enough. They don't have a brand anymore. That's my argument.
Okay, that's an argument. Right now, like when Netflix started, and I wasn't a Netflix from the ground up, like subscriber. Right.
Like me.
I wasn't. No, I wasn't. I started sometime after Stranger Things became a thing. Mm-hmm. Now that it feels so fragmented, and it kind of reminds me of like the early days before they had the Dish and DirecTV kind of coalesced all these different channels or all these different things. And you can buy packages, and it was like kind of a one-stop shop. Well, now, I mean, there was something, Julia Roberts is in some show, and she was advertising it the other night, and I saw, and it's on Hulu. Well, I don't subscribe to Hulu, and then certain things will be on Apple TV. I do have Apple TV. I do have HBO Max, but you're kind of written out of the content. I'd like to be able to go to one streaming service and pay, even if I had to pay a larger price, to have the option to watch what's showing on Hulu, what's showing on Paramount Plus, what's showing, I mean, but everyone's in their individual game. And so if you purchased every single streaming service, the whole point of the cord cutting was to decrease your costs, right? And you're that not decreasing it, yeah. your costs. You're not decreasing your costs. Like if right. I'm going to sign up for Paramount and I'm going to sign up for, you know, Showtime and I'm going to sign up for HBO Max, CBS, well, CNN Plus is biting the dust, Hulu, Apple TV. Netflix, Apple TV. I mean, you're looking at what? Little over $100.
I don't know. It adds up, you know, and I'm sure there are more streamers coming.
So you can't even consume the content you want.
Right.
And you have to kind of pick the weird venue. And so Netflix, maybe, I mean, what could their next game be?
I don't think they realize that they've lost their market. What is it about Netflix that makes Netflix Netflix? In the beginning, it was enough that they were the streaming platform. That's not enough anymore. The game has changed and they haven't kept up. So they have right. to find a new niche to go after. Unless... They could just go after the niche of, well, we're the most expensive streaming platform, even though we don't have much content. Still, we're the most expensive.
Well, I don't think they are. Are they the most expensive?
I think so. Everyone else is at most $10, right? Hulu is a little bit more because they're more of an aggregate. They have a bunch of different channels mm-hmm. under Hulu. So Hulu may have the most content now. It's not necessarily the best content, but I think they probably have the most content. I don't know for sure.
I don't know for sure either. I mean, what about the consumer? I mean, when the whole concept was of cord cutting, you know, was, okay, get rid of your DirecTV, get rid of Dish, get rid of all of it.
You keep focusing on Dish and Direct Network. You know, for most of us, it was just the cable networks.
I am focused because that's my experience. And so when I want to, so like I've got a lot of crap on Dish right now and I'm paying high prices.
How much do you pay now?
I pay $140 a month.
That's crazy. That's
for
really
shit,
nutty.
And it's garbage. It's garbage.
And that's the old model. You know, when I cut the cord, we were paying about $100 a month for cable, and we weren't getting any special fancy. We didn't have HBO. We weren't getting any fancy stuff. That was just basically basic cable.
Right. I have HBO, and then HBO Max is thrown in. Yeah, you know, big
well,
whoopee.
So you have more than we did. So you do have some premium channels there.
Yeah, so I have some maybe it's like $150. It was like over $180, and I cut back.
Wow.
And it was just like, yeah, so
you know,
it's
I went from $100 to $10 with Netflix. And yeah, we gave up some stuff, but there was plenty of stuff to have. You know, and that's the thing. If you want to be an adult about it, you just have to realize that I'm going to pick one streaming or two streaming services, and I'm going to be limited to that content.
Right.
And, you know, I have Hulu, and I got a really good deal on Disney so a couple months ago. So now I have Hulu and Disney, which is a really nice mix. They have a lot of content there.
Yeah, they do have a lot of content. Yeah, I don't have Disney.
Oh, and we have Amazon, too, but that's very kind of a secondary to their shipping stuff.
Oh, yeah, I don't deal with Amazon,
right.
so I don't have
sorry
that.
About that.
Sorry about that. But Amazon, I have an app on my TV and it comes up, but there's a lot of paid content. There are some things I can get. You know, someone needs to just coalesce all these things so I can be happy and watch everything I want to watch.
Well, Catherine, I think you're right in canceling Netflix, unless, of course, Netflix is willing to, you know, pick up a new show called maybe Subrant.
Oh, I doubt that.
I think you should call them up and demand or say, look, Netflix, unless you pick up my show, I'm canceling your service.
And they'd be like, bye.
They cancel it for you. All right, bye. We're canceled. Netflix has canceled us.